Spin Show is back, and I'm speaking with John Clark, a lifelong musician, about music. And John, we discussed Bob Dylan, the number one songwriter on AOL Music's pick for the ultimate rock songwriters. And number two is a couple of guys that I think we both agree could easily have been named number one, John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
And for that matter, they could have easily been named as individuals rather than as a songwriting duo. But the fact is they represent the absolute ultimate in collaboration. And I use them as examples in my audio production class all the time because I pair my students and tell them, you have to work together all the time. And the reason for that is I hate to resort to the cliche, two heads are better than one, but it's always a great idea to be able to bounce ideas off of each other, and not only that, correct each other's mistakes and excesses and whatever. And Lennon McCartney just absolutely personify that kind of songwriting relationship.
I'm assuming, though, you don't recommend that your students' teams introduce a Yoko.
That would be death.
Let's not go there immediately. Let's talk about Lennon and McCartney. So I see the Beatles as having a particular evolution. And I suppose every artist go through it, but because they were trailblazers, there was no one to show them the way. So their first few years from I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You for, you know, the first two, three, 4 years, they were a band that wrote three-minute rock ditties about love and girls and fairly tame stuff because that's all the public would take. And I don't mean to put
tame.
Those songs down. They have a hell of a backbeat.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word tame, that's for sure.
No, but I guess what I'm tame in the lyrics. You have to say, I want to hold your hand. Mick Jagger took it to, I want to spend, let's spend the night together. And it wasn't until the, you know, the bands you were talking about, like Aerosmith, that, you know, started talking about fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round.
That's Queen.
I know, but it's the same principle.
No. Yeah.
I couldn't think of an Aerosmith line that would fit it there.
Yeah. Well, loving an elevator, you know.
There you go.
Going up while you're getting down or whatever. I can't remember it. I try to forget, actually.
Lennon and McCartney were too classy for that. And the times wouldn't permit it.
Well, the strange thing about those, even those early songs, from a musician standpoint, the lyrics were, as you say, pretty straightforward. But if you sit down and try to play those songs, you think, oh, that's a simple song. I can play that. And when you sit down to start playing them, you learn that both Lennon, or actually McCartney is a great guitar player, but Lennon was a guitar player, and George Harrison was a tremendous guitar player. And if you try to start playing those songs, you discover they're not that easy to play. They've got some strange chords in them.
Yeah,
they sound like simple rock and roll songs, but they're not easy to play.
Yeah, interesting. Well, the other thing about it, my first... So I was 12 years old when the Beatles came out, and the teenage girls over the next couple of years were gaga over the Beatles. And for me, they were bubblegum. Not that I knew what an alternative to bubblegum, but I was into Dylan and then Paul Simon and Garfunkel and things, and then the Mamas and the Papas. And I never got over my initial reaction to the Beatles, and it took me quite a while to come back to them. And so something like Paperback Writer would come out, and I dismissed that. I didn't like that. And today, it's one of my favorite Beatles songs of all time.
I wonder why that is. Well, you know, I was 12 years old in 1969, and the Beatles were no more by then. And so as I started listening to rock and roll radio, I was listening to Paul McCartney's solo albums and George Harrison's solo albums. And that's what introduced me to those guys, because I really didn't know that much about the Beatles as a young kid, except that I saw their pictures everywhere, and I wished that my parents would let me grow my hair out. But boy, I got into them in a big way later on, and made sure that I was aware of everything that they ever done.
Yes,
and they're giants. The interesting thing about it is, when you said that they didn't have anybody showing them the way, actually, I think they did. All their influences were American black musicians. And it's the same with the Rolling Stones. It's the same with Eric Clapton, same with the Yardbirds, Jimmy Page, Robin Trower, we were discussing him earlier.
And Pete.
All their influences are American blues. And when the Beatles were playing in Germany in their early years in England, they were a cover band. And I've got this album, Live at the BBC, where everything they do is a cover. There's only about five Beatles tunes on it. And they were one of the hottest live bands you ever heard in your life. And I often wish that I could travel back in time. They were the ultimate bar band. They were so tight. They played 6-7 hours every night, 6 nights a week. And they really honed their skills and their ability to play together. And I think that had a tremendous influence when their creative juices really kicked in and they started writing songs. It was because they knew each other so well. And they knew the whole lexicon and the musicology of what an effective song is that's going to move people.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm with you. And, well, I didn't realize that when I was 12, 13, and 14. It's so clear when you hear it now. I also think it's interesting, we've talked about this before, you and I have both had students who, of course, they were not born when the Beatles were done, when the Beatles quit. And they go back and, you know, their parents raised them on classic rock, and so they may be huge Zeppelin fans or whoever. But
Right. They
go back and look at the Beatles and they say, I don't get it. Those guys aren't anything special. Why do you guys worship them? And I think they misunderstand the context. And that's what I meant when I said they didn't have anybody to show them away. You're right, of course, that the roots of rock come out of American, you know, rhythm and blues. But
well, it's the same. You're right. The only person they can be compared to is Elvis Presley, and his influences were the same. You know, he's a cracker, and what he listened to was gospel music and black music, and he took that and made something different as a solo artist, essentially, even though he had a band. But the difference that the Beatles made was they invented the band concept for rock and roll.
Yes, and they also they had a beat. I mean, they chose their name for a reason, the Beatles.
Right.
And they had a beat that Elvis never had. And frankly,
Right. The
Stones have a great beat, the Who has a great beat, but you can't say those bands ever topped the beat that the Beatles had.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because you know, Elvis Presley stuff, the whole, you know, what's featured is his voice and his singing, and the drums are going to be pretty much in the background, and the players, at least his drummer, was not well known as a great drummer. He had, you know, his guitar player achieved some notoriety, but you're right. Part of it's the production techniques, and so the Beatles have that to have George Martin to thank for that in part, but it was something that was already established in their live playing, a big beat with, you know, a rhythm section, bass and drums that were prominent, and later in their recording, in the production, it was also prominent.
Yep. Well, so how would you describe the period they moved on to after they finished with the 3-minute quick rockers, and they moved into more substantive music, both lyrically, and they took more chances, I think, with the complexity of the songs they put together. Well, can you describe that period, or
how many
periods they had?
Well, people still love their early music because they're, you know, I think many times because they just represent such formative experiences in their young life.
Well, also, I think...
But there was a period there that just took place over a year or so in 64, where they moved from doing things like I Want to Hold Your Hand and all that kind of thing to Yesterday and Let It Be and you know, that kind of thing, where all of a sudden they just, even though they're young men, display an incredible maturity and an incredible musical sense, and it's as if they I don't know, somehow genetically just changed and turned into tremendous songwriters, you know, where there's this complexity of ideas, and of course a big influence on them was George Martin, because he gave them the freedom to experiment in the studio, and not only from a musical point of view, but from a technological point of view. So many things that happened first on Beatles records from a production standpoint, had never happened before, and now are commonly used by
right.
by rock and roll bands today.
Yeah, there's no question they blaze trails in any number of ways. Mm-hmm. And I believe when you mentioned yesterday, that would be like 65, because mm-hmm. that came out on Help, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they their sound started to change, and then, of course, they were so prolific. I mean, this band was putting out two albums a year, weren't they, for much of the time?
More than that.
Because the same year, Rubber Soul comes out the same year, and that had songs on it like Nowhere Man and Michelle.
Yeah. Oh, Nowhere Man, what a song. Good grief.
Yeah, you're starting to get away from the I Want to Hold Your Hand and get reflective.
Right, and you get into themes of alienation, you get into politics, you get into drugs, all kinds of things going on there. And you can almost also say that the Beatles were responsible for what we now refer to as psychedelia in music.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And now, so let's move on. So you get to 66, and Revolver comes out, mm-hmm. and it's got Eleanor Rigby.
What, you know, I think that's a great example of these vignettes, slices of life kinds of songs, where they're now looking around them, and as they walk down the street or interact or whatever, and they're beginning to focus on the individual lives of people they encounter, and then as you know they go on to imagine what those lives must be like. But a great example, A Day in the Life. My golly.
Yes.
I mean, look at the lyrics to that and what it's about. You get up in the morning, drag a comb across your hair, you read the paper, and all of a sudden you're transported by the news that you read into some other realm. It leads to free association. You start thinking these other things. I mean, in a way, it's like we understand what people's lives are like, you know, in an everyday sense. And they were able to write songs about that.
Yeah,
Penny Lane is another great example of that.
That's true. And so as we go to break, let's listen to a little bit of Penny Lane and snippets from a couple of other Beatles classics.